So we breathe and relax. Surrender to the soothing effect of gravity. While keeping the dignity of the upright spine. We might briefly scan through the terrain of body and mind. Just to know how this moment is weighing on us. To know how it feels to know that we'll sit for a period of 45 minutes. Any ways we're braced against the possibilities, discomfort or boredom. We seek some reassurance and that reassurance might come in the form of our intention reassurance might come as a kind of commitment to wisdom and love and waking up. That reassurance might come from knowing that many have walked this path before us and many will follow us. And no matter how boxed in the moment might feel, the conditions are present for us to become more free. We have what we need to become more free. We need look nowhere else other than here. As we connect with the anchor of attention, for most that's the sensations of the breathing. As we connect with this, it can be helpful to stabilize the internal gaze. And so often the internal gaze is flitting about. As if we're looking at different spots of the internal mental screen. It can be useful just to find a place in the darkness, the brightness of the internal mental screen, and gently rest the attention in one place. It's a big deal to be present for even one breath. To be present, to be awake to what's here, is very much interwoven with letting go. With a kind of radical inner nonviolence. The Buddha said, whatever is not yours, let go of it. Your letting go will be for your long-term benefit and welfare. And then asks, what is not yours? The answer, of course, is everything. Whatever feels like a possession, like your own, like it's under your control, surrender that to awareness. Moment by moment, we make peace with the human condition. It's through the imperfection of the moment that we walk through a door into completeness. The Buddha said pleasure and pain are not problems. But craving and aversion complicate everything. Over the years of practice, developed a kind of reverence for the depth of my own craving and aversion. For the default response of my mind that leads to a sense of the intolerability of the imperfection of the human condition. And when something is assumed to be intolerable, the mind is overrun with agitation and fear. We can't repeat the original confusion. We can't take an aversive stance of hatred or blame in relation to clinging, in relation to craving and aversion. We cannot hate our way out of hatred. We cannot cling our way out of craving. We love it to death. This is where vipassana and metta intersect. How can the heart be softened by the sense of intolerability, by the gross and subtle forms of craving and aversion? Can we know craving and aversion as a phenomena arising in body and mind? To open our heart to it, to be courageous. Please come out of the small corner of the mind into which we often back ourselves. There's more space than we can imagine. The guards we've stationed at the door of the eye and the ear, at the door of feelings and the body and the mind. Those guards can stand down. Any questions about your practice? Yeah, thank you. So, question of how much to pay attention to the underlying emotion of a certain kind of thought. When the stickiness of thought is fueled by the rumbling engine of feeling, as far as I can tell. And so, especially when we find ourselves in kind of ruminative loops or really hooked with something or something keeps coming up, it's a kind of useful thing to actually move to the body to sense the kind of drivenness of the thinking. If the body is completely at ease or there's deep equanimity with the body, thoughts come through without making much of an impression at all. But when the words and images and the mind are kind of empowered by rumbling in the emotional body, activation in the body, then it gets much stickier. But sometimes we, as just like you're suggesting, there can be some value in like, okay, I'm actually, it's some ways like the thoughts are the steam coming off the engine of feeling. And a lot of times we're like batting around the steam, you know? And there can be real value like of going into the engine basement, yeah? Okay, what does it mean to be still with this? And so, sometimes when we can actually develop a relationship of clarity, of wisdom, of kindness with the state of activation in the body, the thinking fades out or just becomes less compelling. And so you don't have to make that a kind of habitual move that you do in practice every time there's a lot of thought, but exploring that sometimes, like, okay, what would it be like to have a kind of a deep peace with this agitation in the body? And then look, how does that affect the mind and our view of what matters, our view of who we are, our view of what we need? Part of the value of retreat is we get to really see the ways that we build our lives like Lego pieces of narrative. And how dependent that is often on the sense of incompleteness at the level of the body, the sense of something's not quite right. And something's almost always not quite right, you know? Like in any given moment, many things are right and many things are wrong. And so we can kind of build like an entire philosophy of life, of ourselves, out of these like building blocks of dissatisfaction in the body, the sense of incompleteness, the sense of wrongness. No. It's like it's like there's something missing from the breakfast line or something, right? And we see that and we wanted something, and there's a kind of unconscious process. We're unhappy about it. The body kind of reacts. There's some contraction, disappointment, dissatisfaction. But we miss it. We miss it. It flies under the radar of mindfulness. And when it flies under the radar of mindfulness, it then catalyzes a kind of the thought of like some sort of political action committee around breakfast. And the strategy required to advocate appropriately. And it's like, it just, a lot of our, I mean, it's kind of a silly example, but it's like we actually do that a lot. Dissatisfaction at the level of the body is built into an entire way of living. And so here we're untangling the threads of thought and feeling and seeing how the world looks when there's some peace with imperfection. And this doesn't mean this is tantamount to passivity, or we're accepting everything always. Not at all. We're accepting sensory experience in this moment. Sensory experience in this moment is as it is. That is not something we fight with. But the peace that we make with that sensory experience in this moment may lead us to action in the next. But it arises out of the bedrock of steadiness and equanimity. The others. Yes.
You said we cannot end hatred.
Yeah.
What is hatred?
So I said that we cannot end hatred with hatred. What is hatred? Sometimes there's a translation of a Pali word that sometimes is translated as hatred, sometimes as aversion, and along with greed and delusion, those three are said to be a kind of like the engine of much suffering. In the more psychological sense, my experience of hatred is it's a kind of anger or aversion that hardens into something that is truly dangerous. It's a kind of fixed view and insulated heart, and it makes cruelty possible. It is inherently separating rather than connecting. And so part of our practice is to see ourselves in all beings. Because it's not possible to hate another in the same way when we see ourselves in them. And this makes me think I was thinking of Martin Luther King as I said that, and you may murder the one who hates, but you cannot murder hatred. You may murder the liar, but not the lie. And so his just steadfast commitment to love in the face of just unimaginable hatred is, it's a kind of North Star in my own practice. And I alluded to a kind of radical nonviolence with relation to one's own experience. And my sense is that that hatred maybe always depends on a certain kind of the intolerability of one's own experience. And the more we actually practice a sort of open-hearted, loving relationship with the whole spectrum of our being, in its dignity and its humility, in its beauty and its confusion, in our strength and in our vulnerability, the more we actually can fully open the heart to that, the less possible it is to hate. So much of my practice has just been the heart just being softened by craving and aversion, by opening to that. And one of my teachers, Shinzen Young, said it's like the substance of our being is kneaded like dough. And that's a lot of what we're doing in the silence. We're just like letting ourselves be kneaded like dough. The Dalai Lama said every once in a while anger has a function. Every once in a while anger can mobilize us to take action to prevent harm. Even though he's generally skeptical of it as a source for motivating ourselves. But he said every once in a while it can help us. And then he goes on to say that hatred only only ever destroys us. That kind of hardened form of division only ever destroys us. So we are entering the heart of the retreat, and there's a momentum that we're building together, and we can keep surrendering to the silence, to really take care in how we're moving, how we're eating, how we're transitioning. To know that we're all affecting each other. My mind is very much dependent on the stability of your intention. It's very much like co-created. We're all affecting each other. We're all serving each other. So without getting tight, without feeling like we're performing at all. Dharma, meditation, mindfulness, never a performance. Without feeling like we're performing, we're just offering our care and awareness. As we get more quiet, we can start to collapse some of the distinctions between the sense of sitting, transitioning, walking, resting. And so it's very important to notice where the mind goes when we stop paying attention, when we think the period is over. The bell rings and the mind defaults to somewhere. It defaults to something. It feels like we're returning to who we are. It's like, oh, I was meditating, the bell rings. Now it's time to get back to Matthew. Let's just hang out here for a little bit. Yeah. And then I'm like, yeah, I'm Matthew. And I want fill in the blank. I'm doing pretty fill in the blank. That kind of default position of the attention, it feels like our home, but it's just a familiar corner of our thinking. We don't have to abandon that corner or the coziness of it. We just want to see, where do I go when I think it's time to go home? What feels like home base? Because that is where our habits are at their densest. And there's a lot of suffering that hides out in our habits. Just with a lot of gentleness, we start to notice. Good to be with you. The meeting schedule is posted out there. So if you didn't have a meeting yesterday, you'll have one today. So check the board for the time. And I wish you all a useful day. Thank you.